4 weeks ago, Austin, Ryan Goodwin, and myself did basically the dumbest thing I've ever done in my life. And that wasn't just take this photo. We drove up to Utah for a 200-mile relay race called the Ragnar. Probably one of the dumbest things I've ever done in my life, as I said. But it was a great opportunity, a great experience, because we were on a team of 12 Christians. And we just met. I didn't really know any of these folks before this trip. And we spent a day and a half running 200 miles across the beautiful Utah mountain ranges. And it was just amazing. It was something that I'll never forget. We had a captain of our team, the one who organized the entire trip. Her name is Robin. This is Robin. She is, and she won't mind me saying so, she is a 59-year-old woman who is the wife of one of the elders at the Kaysville congregation where Ryan's brother Kyle preaches. This is Robin, who is probably one of the warmest and most welcoming people that I've met in a really long time. And she had the opportunity to invite all of us from across the U.S., there was 12 of us who'd never really met before, to her home, get together, and drive around running this 200-mile relay race. You know, I truly believe that one of the greatest things that we can do in convincing people about how to live the Christian life is not to stand up here in the pulpit and teach a lesson about it. I think it is good, and it's absolutely necessary for us to stand for the truth and to speak it publicly. But I think one of the best ways that we can show other people and teach other people about how to be a true Christian is to live it. And Robin was the kind of person who lived it. There was something that happened to her on our run, and I want to use it as the example for our entire lesson. And if you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 1, it's a passage we all know, but Paul says for the Corinthian brethren there in 1 Corinthians 11 verse 1, "Imitate me just as I also imitate Christ." You guys remember, is Paul some supernatural being who cannot sin and who's infallible? No. Paul was a man. He put on his tunic one arm at a time, I guess, like anyone else does. He was an apostle of the Lord, so he was inspired for sure. But he wasn't without sin. And so when he tells people, "Imitate me just as I also imitate Christ," it's not pride, it's not arrogance, it's not being haughty and puffed up. It's something that we can use as an example. And when you see brothers and sisters around you doing good things and reacting to situations in positive ways, take note of that. Use it as a lesson. And use it to know how you should be serving Christ even more than maybe you are today. Imitate me just as I also imitate Christ. So I want to look at the reaction that Robin had to a certain situation, and I want us to imitate how she reacted. Because I've been thinking about this lesson a lot. I've been thinking about sort of the pieces of this lesson well before we actually ran this race. And it really did all come together. It all congealed. As soon as I saw this one situation and how she reacted, it all made sense how we should be handling ourselves as Christians in this world. So, that's Robin. And she's running. She was on the first leg of her race. She was doing pretty well, actually. She had her iPhone out and she was pacing herself. She was well ahead of her time. Now, don't let the gray hair fool you. Robin is an avid runner, and she did very well on our trip. So she was out running and she was doing really well. And it had been raining that morning, so she had a visor on, and the visor was kind of giving her some trouble. So she actually pulled it off and she was fixing it as she was running, just kind of multitasking out there. If you've ever had to do that, it's a little challenging. And from behind her, she heard this voice. And this young man said, "Hey, old lady, you doing okay? Hey, old lady, you doing okay?" Now, I don't know about you, but I probably would not deal with that very well. I would not handle that situation very well at all, especially for her out there in this situation, doing her best, feeling good about herself, running with endurance, our whole motto for our team was running with endurance, the race that's set before us. So there she is. She's out there running with endurance, and somebody comes up from behind her and says, "Hey, old lady, you doing okay?" And as this person ran past, as she was catching her breath, trying to figure out what just happened, this young man dressed up as a Spartan, no shirt on, 12-pack abs, right? I mean, he has his little skirt on or whatever, and his helmet and shield and sword. The race was kind of crazy. People ran in costumes and all kinds of things. So this young man ran by in his Spartan getup as he had exclaimed to her, "Hey, old lady, you doing okay?" I want to investigate here for the rest of our time. What do you do when someone is rude to you? How do you react? How do you handle it when somebody is rude to you? It seems like such a simple question, right? But the answer to how we handle it when someone is rude to us, I think, is very complicated and is something that we kind of need to unpack a little bit. The way that Robin handled herself in this case was very admirable. I really looked up to how she handled herself in this case. And so I want to talk about her reaction, how she handled herself, and learn a couple of lessons from an old lady. That's the title of our lesson tonight. Lessons from an old lady. And notice the quotation marks. I do not want to say that I'm calling her an old lady. I'm quoting from this young Spartan man. But we can learn examples from how she handled herself in the middle of her run when somebody came up behind her and said, "Hey, old lady, you doing okay?" You know, because I think we can all relate to that. We've all been called a name, or somebody has been rude to us from time to time. So what should we do? How should we react? And we're going to rely heavily on God's word throughout this lesson. So if you have your Bibles out, get ready to turn along with me. We need to first choose the right battle. One of the first lessons that we learn from this situation is that there is a battle to fight, and there is a battle not to fight. And we need to choose the right one. Robin, what she could have done was lost focus on what her real mission was. What was her real mission? It was to run. It was to get to that finish line so she could pass off the baton to the next runner in the relay race. It was not to sprint ahead and argue with the young man. It was not to go full out and try to show that young man what it was. It wasn't even to retaliate in some way or get all the rest of our team to retaliate in some way. Her mission on that day was to run the race and to do it the best that she could. She could have become discouraged about the incident. She could have just thrown up her hands and said, "Well, if everyone's just going to look at me this way or call me these kinds of names, well, then I just give up." But what did she do? She recognized what the right battle was, and she fought that one. She didn't fight the battle that was useless and profitless. She fought the right battle. You know, I think sometimes we need to ask ourselves, what manner of spirit are you of? In our day-to-day relationships, when somebody is rude to us, we need to ask ourselves, what manner of spirit are you of? Let's turn in our Bibles, if you will, to Luke chapter 9. Luke chapter 9, there's a story here of James and John. And this is one of my favorite stories in Jesus' early ministry. As he's going around with the apostles and they're going from city to city, James and John would have had a very different reaction to being called an old lady. In Luke chapter 9, verse 51, it says, "Now it came to pass, when the time had come to be received, that he steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem." This is Jesus. They're on their way to Jerusalem. "And he sent messengers before his face, and as they went, they entered the village of the Samaritans to prepare for him. But they did not receive him, because his face was set for his journey toward Jerusalem. And when his disciples James and John saw this, they said, 'Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them, just as Elijah did?'" You know, that's how I would have reacted to the situation. "You want me to bring fire down and destroy them because they have rejected the one true Jesus, the one true Messiah? They rejected you? Let's wipe them off the face of the planet, Jesus." And that's the impetuous young man that I am responding, and that was the impetuous young men that were responding here in this case of James and John. But what did Jesus say in verse 55? "But he turned and rebuked them and said, 'You do not know what manner of spirit you are of. For the Son of Man did not come to destroy men's life, but to save them.'" Then they went to another village. So Jesus is basically saying, this is the wrong fight. We are not here to fight this village. We are not here to fight these people. We are not here to destroy them and wipe them off the face of the earth. In fact, he says that he did not come to destroy men's lives, but to save them. And so I think it's really important for us to not allow our pride and our desire for pleasure and our desire for people to call us wonderful names and lift us up and elevate us and to always say wonderful things about us. We need to make sure that our pride doesn't cause us to go to war with other people. Because the battle is not with men. The battle is not with that young Spartan man. The battle is not with the guy who cut you off on the freeway. That's not what the battle is with. The battle is much greater, it's much deeper, and it's much, much more spiritual and much more lasting. James chapter 4, James says something there in James chapter 4, verse 1, where he says, where do wars and fights come from among you? Why do you guys fight all the time? Why are you quarreling? Why are you bickering with each other? Why are you always going to battle with each other? He goes on to say that you lust and you do not have. They come from the desires for pleasure that war in your members. James is saying here that you have all these desires. You have all of these worldly desires that you want to heap up for yourself. You want fame and fortune and pleasure. You want everybody to speak well of you. And you don't have these things. You want these pleasurable experiences, and it causes you to go to war with each other. Because when somebody doesn't acknowledge you like you should, then it's time to fight. Ready? Let's put on our boxing gloves. Let's fight. What manner of spirit are we of, though? Are we of our Father, or are we of Satan? Are we going to war with men, or are we trying as best we can to be a good example for them, to lead them to Christ? You know what? The world hates you. Get over it. The world hates you, and it will always hate you, and it should never be a surprise that the world hates you. In 1 John chapter 3 and verse 13, John says, do not marvel, my brethren, if the world hates you. Don't marvel. Don't be surprised. Don't be shocked that the world hates you. The world hated Jesus. They're going to hate you if you're like Jesus. And the world has no care or concern for you. But let's not be surprised about that. I think it's easy for us to become bitter and for us to hold grudges and to make assumptions about people's motives. It's easy for us to become so upset about a situation and so overwrought about a situation when really the person who offended us doesn't care at all that they offended us. Doesn't that just make you mad sometimes? Oh, I'm so angry at that person who cut me off on the freeway, and literally they probably had no idea you were even there. And they probably are not thinking about you at all anymore. But there you are getting so worked up about it. What use is that? The world hates you. Get used to it. The world doesn't care how you feel. Get used to it. That young Spartan man, while he may have had other motives, at the very end of the day, didn't necessarily care how he made Robin feel. Get used to it. The world hates you. But in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 44, Jesus said in that great sermon, but I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. Does that sound like going to battle? Does that sound like fighting with somebody who is rude to us, who offended us in some way? No. Pray for them. Bless them. Love them. Care for them. And even go so far as to go the extra mile for them. Even go so far as when you've been struck on one cheek, give them the other also. Even go so far as to give them your coat. Go so far as to just give to those who even hate you. And so the battle is not with this world. The battle is not with men. The battle is to make sure that our godly example is shining in this world. And the minute that we ruin that, the minute that we go to battle, we have now taken a bushel and put it over our light. We were a city that was set on a hill, and now we're hidden. And that's just what happens when we choose to fight the wrong battle. So when someone's rude to you, when they say something that they shouldn't have said, rather than getting so upset and fighting with them about it, let's make sure we're fighting the right battle and being the right kind of example. I think a second lesson from this story that, you know, Robin experienced in her run was that sometimes you just need to put yourself in other people's shoes. And the story actually goes on because, as she would recall later on, Robin actually, rather than becoming upset with this person, rather than responding back in anger, and rather than stewing on it to the point where she was spewing venom about it later on, you know what she did? The very first thing she said after she finally told us about what had happened, she said, "You know, I've said some things that came out wrong before too." She didn't ascribe him evil motives. She didn't label him as a vicious and attacking enemy. You know what she said? "I've done things I shouldn't have done too, so I really can't fault the guy too much." What a refreshing response. And if it wasn't for this response, if it wasn't for her response, I literally would not be talking about this right now, because this is the response that was so shocking and stark and refreshing. Because, I mean, Austin, you can ask Austin, all of us were in, Austin more than anyone else was like, "Let's go get him." But Robin was temperate. She was patient. Actually, it wasn't even so much Austin, it was her daughter who was running with us that was ready to go get him. But she responded by saying, "You know what, I've been in that guy's shoes before too. And I've said things I shouldn't have said." And you know what every one of us has? Right? Haven't we all just stuck our big giant size 12 feet in our mouth before? Accidentally make fun of a pregnant woman when she was standing in front of you, or accidentally, you know, say something in front of your spouse that made them feel uncomfortable and then you regretted it for a week after that. I mean, we've all said things that we just should not have said. And sometimes we just need to connect with others rather than complain about them. Sometimes we need to make the connection between us and other people instead of just jumping to this immediate response of complaining about a situation. And this is really all about empathy. Maybe they were just trying to help. And maybe it was just honest. Maybe he was honestly trying to help. And, you know, maybe he was... She actually went on to think that maybe he was in character as this Spartan running along. And rather than saying "old lady," maybe he actually said, "Me lady, do you need any assistance?" She even went to question what she thought she heard. But when she finally realized that he said "old lady," she realized, you know, "I've said things I shouldn't have said too. And things that I've said didn't come out the right way as well." Let's turn, if you will, over to Colossians. The book of Colossians in chapter 3 and verse 12. In Colossians chapter 3, verse 12, Paul says, "Therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another, and forgiving one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so you also must do." The situation that Paul's talking about here in Colossians chapter 3 is somebody who has a legitimate complaint about something. A legitimate complaint that somebody actually offended them. They really did actually offend you. And what does Paul say to do? Not only to be humble and meek and kind and long-suffering and patient with them, but to forgive them. Why? Because God forgave us. God forgave us because we have done something equally as bad as maybe that person has done. So we forgive because we've been forgiven. Romans chapter 15, verses 1 through 2. Paul, in the conclusion of Romans chapter 14, which is all about making sure that we don't use our liberties as a stumbling block for somebody else. We talked about that in last Sunday evening's lesson just briefly. But at the end of that, sort of the conclusion of Romans chapter 14 about not putting a stumbling block in someone else's way, Paul says, "We who are strong ought to bear with the scruples of the weak and not to please ourselves. Let each of us please his neighbor for his good, leading to edification." So you know what? It's not about you putting everyone down and holding up your rights. You know what? Just bear with people. Deal with people. Bear with their weaknesses, because you can help edify them. You can help build them up. You can help make them stronger if you bear with them and are patient with them. And so we need to connect with people rather than complain. It would be very easy for us just to jump in and start complaining about people, and I'm probably the king of that. This lesson for me is all about stepping on my toes, because I can easily and so quickly jump to complain about something rather than seeing the connection I have with somebody, rather than seeing that, you know, I'm no better. I'm no better than that person. I've done the same thing. Made the same mistakes. It's harder to jump to that kind of conclusion than it is to just immediately start complaining about something. And I think we need to practice empathy in all that we do. You know, I was going to do a whole lesson about empathy. That was actually going to be the topic of this entire lesson. But I think empathy, in my mind, is such a valuable tool that we have. To be able to put yourself in someone else's position, in someone else's shoes, and really see life the way that they see it. To really experience things the way that they experience. I think it's really easy for us to quickly villainize people who are different from us. You guys, you know what I'm talking about? Like, you find one minor little thing that somebody has that's different from you, and all of a sudden now they are the enemy and you are the hero of your story. You ever realize how easy it is to make yourself the hero of your own story? You are the champion of your little universe, right? You are the key figure of your story. Ken used to say something when he used to teach the class on teaching others the Bible. He said something that really stuck with me. He said that everyone's favorite word is their own name. Isn't that true? Isn't your favorite word your own name? Because nothing piques your interest more than saying Vernon. Now, that only piqued Vernon's interest. But if I were to say any of your names, ooh, he's talking about me. We are always the key figure, the central figure of our own story, and it's just the way we are in our nature to be very interested in ourselves and in the way that we feel and how we are and how people have offended us. It's in our nature to do that. But I think in humility, we need to realize that we're no better than anyone else. And that we need to put ourselves in other people's shoes and see life through their eyes. See life through their frame of reference. We need to put away pride and look for opportunities to help others. In Philippians chapter 2, verses 3 through 4, there's a really powerful passage there that Paul talks about. He says, "Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself." Lowliness of mind, esteem others better. Okay, we're putting value here. We're putting ourselves low and we're putting others high. "In lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you not look out not only for his own interests, but also the interests of others." Is it easy for us to look out for the interests of others? Do you do it a lot? I look out for my interests all the time. I know exactly what my interests are. I know exactly what makes me feel good. But I don't find myself looking out for the interests of others maybe as often as I should. And so empathy and seeing the connection that I have with other people and seeing myself as lower than other people and them as higher than me is more important, is something I should be doing. You know, and I really find the beauty that Jesus taught in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12. You know, the golden rule. What is the golden rule? "Do unto others as you'd have them do to you." You know what that did right there when Jesus said, "Do unto others as you'd have them do to you"? That just basically explained a novel about how you should act towards somebody. Because Jesus didn't have to go through every nook and cranny about what you should do in response to people and how you should treat other people and what you should say in this situation or that situation. You know, each and every one of us knows exactly how we want to be treated, don't we? You know how you want to be treated. You know what makes you feel good. You know what gives you a warm, fuzzy feeling inside. And what Jesus is saying here in Matthew 7, verse 12, if you ever have a question or if you ever have any doubt about how you should treat somebody else, just flip it and figure out how you'd want to be treated. And it seems so cliche, right? It seems so simple and juvenile. It seems so low level. But that's exactly why this is so beautiful, because everybody understands it. Ashlyn understands it. I understand it, and you understand it. We all know how we want to be treated, so turn around and treat other people the same way. And empathize with their situation. Put yourself in their shoes and treat them better even than you might treat yourself. So finally, the last point. The last thing that I want us to draw from this story of Robin and her run was that sometimes we need to wait and pray before reacting. Sometimes we just have to take some time, get a little bit of distance, and then figure out how we're going to respond. You know, Robin didn't have a whole lot of time in the moment. And so far, we haven't actually said or talked about what Robin said in response to this young Spartan man. You know what she said? She said, "Yeah, I'm good. Nice outfit." That's it. You know, and in hindsight, a lot of us might think like, man, if I only would have known that was happening, I could have popped back with a real smart one, a real jabber. I could have gotten him back right away. Our first reaction needs to be with love. Our first response needs to be with love. But you know what happens when time separates us from an event? We have one of two options. We can either get some biblical perspective and some spiritual perspective on the situation, or we can get wound up. And I fear this is what happens too often when time and distance separates us from an event. We get pretty wound up about things. Often we try to justify our reactions or our wrathful or angry feelings by saying, "Well, how would you feel if he said that to you?" And we try to pull other people in to agree with us, right? We try to get this mob mentality of, "Come on, guys, agree with me. Come on, guys, my anger is justified. You'd be mad too, wouldn't you?" And we try to pull other people in and make ourselves feel better that my anger is justified. "Well, how would you feel if that happened?" And we get ourselves wound up. There's a reason why every married couple receives the advice, "Never let the sun go down on your anger." There's a reason why everybody gives that advice, because the longer you let something go, the longer you let your anger go, the more it builds into this snowball effect until you are a bitter and unhappy person. We need to not get so wound up. Psalm 37, verses 8 and 9, the psalmist says, "Cease from anger and forsake wrath." Stop being mad, he says. "Do not fret." There's another one that I love. Just right out, as frank and blunt as you can be. "Do not fret. It only causes harm. For evildoers shall be cut off, but those who wait on the Lord, they shall inherit the earth." Those who wait on the Lord, those who are patient and those who are temperate, those who are doing the will of the Lord, they're going to be the ones who inherit the earth. Not the angry man, not the wrathful person, not the one who jumps back and responds in anger. Let's look at Genesis chapter 4. You've got a Bible, turn to Genesis chapter 4. This is a story in the very beginning of the Bible that's, I think, really important. Sort of frames a lot of the anger and the angry situations that we see throughout God's Word. Genesis chapter 4 is the story of Cain and Abel. And as you'll remember, Cain made a sacrifice and Abel made a sacrifice. And whose sacrifice was accepted? Well, verse 5 says, "God did not respect Cain and his offering, and Cain was very angry and his countenance fell." So here's a situation where God wasn't very happy with Cain, and Cain became angry about it. And Cain was very upset, not at God necessarily, but at his brother, who had offered a good sacrifice that God was happy with. Jealousy. There we go. It's the seeds of a lot of situations that happen in our own lives. So the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? And why is your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? If you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it." You know, a lot of times when we're angry, when we get upset, when somebody offends us, we kind of respond by saying, like, "I have no choice. What would you do in this situation?" Well, you do have a choice. You do have a choice of how you respond. You do have a choice of whether or not you're going to stay angry or whether or not you're going to control yourself. And that's exactly what God says to Cain here. Sin lies at the door, but you should rule over it. You should rule over it. Are you going to allow somebody else and their offhanded comments or their offhanded reactions or things that just they didn't even think about and they just said to you, are you going to allow that to control who you are and what you do and how you react? Or are you going to control yourself and get some amount of distance and thoughtfulness behind what you do? We need to not get so wound up about things, but just be willing to let things go. Be willing to let, sort of have this baseball mentality about things. You know, when somebody gets up to bat, they don't need to think about all of the times they struck out before that. They just need to focus on what's going on right now. Just forget about the past. Forget about the things that had happened. Forget about that person and the comment that they made. It's not, in the grand scheme of things, it's not a big deal. But we need to pray for strength, and we need to show love. We need to be anxious for nothing, as Paul would say in Philippians chapter 4, verse 6. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. It's really hard to be angry and wrathful and bitter and fighting with somebody that you're praying for, isn't it? If you're praying for somebody, if you're praying that they'll learn the gospel, that they'll learn the truth, that they'll have a productive life in the service of the Lord, it's really hard to be angry and bitter with them. And so when we pray to God and let our cares be known to Him, we can then just let go of all the anxiety and the anxious feelings that we have when we're praying to God and when we're casting our cares on Him. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, not a passage that we have up on the screen, but verses 4 through 7 talks about the characteristics of love. And if we really are loving people, then we're going to have the kind of long-suffering and kindness. We're not going to behave rudely. We're not going to be provoked. We're not going to think evil of people. We're not going to just quickly fly off the handle, and instead we're going to bear all things and endure all things. These characteristics of love that really give people the benefit of the doubt really just let us move past some of the issues that people might throw in our way. So let's be loving and pray that we can be loving just as Jesus was loving. Because what in his example can we relate to here? Could he have called 10,000 angels to pull himself down off that cross? Could he have wiped out everyone off the face of the earth who was crucifying him at that point? Could he have done all of that? But what did he do? Father, forgive them. James chapter 1, verses 19 through 20. So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear. Wait, did I hear that right? Did he say what I think he said? Let me think about that a little bit more. Let me get some distance on that and actually think more about what just happened. Swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. So when somebody is rude to you, listen. Don't talk. Don't get angry. And if you are going to get angry, and if you are going to speak, be very slow about it. But listen. And realize that our wrath, our anger, our vengeance is never going to produce the righteousness of God. So these are just a couple of examples of somebody who did the right thing, who had the right kind of example. And what could she have done? She could have easily ruined her example. She could have easily turned that entire weekend of having 12 Christians together in one place into a terrible time by complaining and being a very hateful and angry person, but rather just saying, you know what? It's water off a duck's back. I did things before that I shouldn't have done, and I see where this person might have been coming from. And she gave him the benefit of the doubt. Let's choose our battles very carefully. Let's make sure that we empathize with others and put ourselves in their shoes. And let's make sure that we're waiting and praying about a situation before we react. This is my lesson. I mean, I need to hear this lesson. And if you've benefited from this lesson, then that's great. But these are things that I struggle with in my own life as a impetuous 31-year-old young man. If you've learned temperance, if you've learned patience, then be an example to those of us who are still running the race. Be an example to those of us who are still living this life, trying to get past some of these things. I think it was a perfect example that Ryan gave about why young men aren't elders. Because we're not always reacting to things in the way that we should. We don't always say things that we should. We're the ones who start up the road rage. We're the ones who start up the battles. And so let's be very careful about that. And let's be very careful that we're always reacting in the way that Christ would have reacted, in the way that he would have handled situations. Well, this lesson is certainly not one that would have taught anyone what to do to be saved. But if you know and you are convinced that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, if you believe in him, if you trust in him, and you are ready to commit your life to him, if you haven't already, then we're ready to baptize you. We're ready to take your confession that Jesus is the Son of God before men. And we'll stand next to you on the beginning of your journey. We'll walk with you. We'll help you in whatever way that we can. If you're ready to start that journey with the Lord today, please come forward as we stand and sing.